You can also find us on television channel 182 on Charter Communications Abundant Television, found on Roku, Apple TV, and Amazon Fire. An exciting podcast coming up, and I can hardly wait to get started. It's debuting on November the 1st. So we're really excited about that as well. So lots of great things happening here on the show. And we're so thank you, because if not for you, we would not be where we are right now. But thank you for watching us and helping us grow. Appreciate it very much. I have a friend, Alan Mendenhall, with me right now. And Alan is actually an author, a speaker. He is, Alan, you do everything. A brief biography. What all do you do?
Well, I'm currently Associate Dean of the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University. And executive director of the Manuel H. Johnson Center for Political Economy, which is a free market educational and research institute here in the business school at Troy University. As you mentioned, I write and speak, and recently have my first novel under contract. It actually comes out on November 30th.
Wow, let's talk a little bit about it.
Well, happy to do it. The title of the book, and this is what the cover is going to look like. This is a nice little thing that will be framed and put on the wall. But the title of the book is A Glooming Peace This Morning, and that is a line from Romeo and Juliet from Shakespeare. And the tale is a Southern Gothic tale, which means that it combines elements of the eerie and the uncanny. I'm thinking Halloween. We're getting so close to Halloween. But the narrator of the book is a character named Cephas, and it's a look back novel. So Cephas is an adult narrating events from his childhood, which took place in the 1970s in the fictional town of Andalusia in the fictional Magnolia County. So when I told my mom about this book, she said, "Those aren't fictional places. Those are real places." I said, "Oh no, mom, there are actual places out there in the world called Andalusia and Magnolia County, but that's not the fictional version, which takes place in my head. You know, these aren't the same places." It's like To Kill a Mockingbird in the sense that the story centers around Cephas and his friends, Lump, Brett, and Michael. But there is a lawsuit in the background, the specter of a lawsuit in the background, sort of like Tom Robinson drives the tale of To Kill a Mockingbird. There's a lawsuit going on in the background. And this one, it's the tale of Tommy and Sarah Warren. And their story was inspired by a case that I read as a law student. So I think it would have been my first year of law school. So in 2006, I read this case about, it was actually a statutory rape case. And it was about a mentally disabled 18, 19 year old. I don't remember the name. I don't remember the age of the person in the actual case, because I never went back and reread the case, because I thought if I went back and reread the case, it would influence too much the fictional case that I was trying to create. And statutory rape is a crime for which the mens rea element is irrelevant. So you either did it or you didn't. It doesn't matter whether you're morally blameworthy or not. And so in this case that I read, the defense was trying to argue that this mentally disabled person didn't have the capacity to commit a crime, couldn't intend to do something bad because he was, as they used to say, mentally retarded. And the law basically didn't care about that, because the law said, you know, if you did it, you did it. And so I thought it was an interesting story and a controversial story, one in which there's a lot of moral ambiguity. There's no good guy. There's no bad guy. It's just all kind of bad. And as I said, morally ambiguous. And the best novels are morally ambiguous. They aren't clear-cut morality plays. They're stories that make you question different sides and what is the right thing. And I think this novel does that. I think it highlights, you know, the violence and poverty and injustice in a small Southern town. And it has elements of the grotesque, like any Southern Gothic novel would. There is an element of decay, an element of decline, as this small town suffers economically and culturally because of technological progress, bringing people out of these towns and into the cities. And so there's social commentary as well. There's a sense of class disparity. Faith and morality are very much wrestled with by the characters, even though, as I say, it's not a very, it's not a morality play. It's not very clear what right and wrong is in these situations. And there is some dark humor, though. But there is also a clear emphasis on individualism versus society. So I use terms to refer to the multitude, the crowd, the throng, the masses, the mob, and to pit individuals against the sort of social collective throughout the story. So I hope it will be an intriguing story. I think people that know me may be a little surprised when they read it, that it may be, they may think, what goes on in your head, Alan? This is weird. Did you come up with this whole thing?
I was about to say. Well, we're glad to get inside that big mind of yours.
Well, and I don't know how big it is, but you may question me after this. Like, what goes on in this guy's head?
Is this a book that will help us to think on maybe social issues that we're experiencing right now? We need help in that department where people can think for themselves.
Well, I think so. And the reason why is that it is, as I've said already, morally ambiguous. So you have to think about the circumstances presented in the novel, and it's not going to have a clear hero or a clear good guy. And I think that that ambiguity is important because life is full of sort of ambiguous situations. I remember when I worked at the Alabama Supreme Court, we would get a case and I would read the appellant's brief and think, oh, wow, the appellant has to win. This is a clear-cut case. What a great argument they just made. And then I would read the appellee's brief and think, oh, wow, well, that seemed like a clear-cut case. Now this side should win. And then I thought, there's no way if I had to pick between this side or that side, which one could win? And fortunately, I didn't have to pick that way. Fortunately, I was guided by the law and by case precedents and by statutory interpretation and by a constitution that when you started digging led you inexorably toward one decision or another. And so thankfully there is the law where you don't have to just sort of choose based on which party you think is right or wrong in this case, because sometimes there's not a clear-cut answer. Sometimes both sides have really good arguments to make, but there has to be a winner in a lawsuit, and the law has to prevail. The law has to be what the ultimate arbiter of disputes. That's what the rule of law is all about. And cases wouldn't get up to the Alabama Supreme Court if they weren't difficult. If the cases were easy, straightforward, clear-cut, they would never make it up there. And so it is amazing how many disputes between interacting humans are complicated. They're so complex that there are no easy answers to them. And so I think that's what the novel tries to capture, is a sense of the past, a sense of foreboding, a sense of moral ambiguity, issues of despair and isolation and any number of complicated matters that we deal with as human beings on a day-to-day basis that are difficult to reduce to simplistic morality tales.
Well, it almost feels like we're losing a sense of respect for other human beings as a country as a whole. Do you think it could be because we're not really thinking about, why is this person in the situation they're in? And everything I do is based on decisions we make. I mean, sometimes I zig when I should zag, So do you think that could be a problem with what we're experiencing in the country right now or in the world?
I do, Donna. And I'm just as guilty as anybody else on this front. Too often, I think we go into debates trying to win. And we're all, when we do that and we're doing it with other adults, I mean, typically adults have their minds made up. They've determined their political positions, their philosophical priors, and they are going to operate on those, and they're going to seek to affirm what it is they already believe. So it's very difficult to change people's minds once they're adults. However, that means that there is an opportunity to win in a different way, which is to seek clarity and understanding. If you go into a, a debate or a conversation about, let's just say, politics. And rather than trying to change someone else's mind, which is not going to happen, and considering that a win, the win might be understanding the other person's point of view. And if that other person can understand your point of view, then you've won, regardless of whether you've changed minds. You've won because then you're able to maintain a friendship. You're able to maintain a relationship despite your differences. And if we don't have that, then society really will be in trouble. My sort of fundamental philosophical beliefs boil down to a sense of pluralism, really, because I don't believe you're ever going to have a uniform populace. We're never going to have, you know, a homogenous viewpoint that everybody holds and everybody is in walking in lockstep. And so what you have to do is figure out how in society to accommodate disagreement and keep disagreement constructive and at the level of rhetoric and discourse so that it doesn't degenerate into violence. And what I fear is that now, because everyone is so angry, we risk letting our differences degenerate into violence. We risk solving our problems through brute force rather than rhetorical debate. You know, I think debate and discussion is healthy, and people like to demean the term argument, but as a lawyer, then that's what you do. I mean, you argue, you put different ideas in contest with one another, and eventually one has to win out in order for you to move forward. That doesn't necessarily mean that the position that wins out is right. I remember several cases where when I worked for the Alabama Supreme Court, where the outcome seemed unjust. It just didn't seem right. It didn't sit well with me.
Yeah.
And that was a result of a poorly written statute, but it wasn't the judiciary's position to rewrite the statute to what it should be to achieve some just result in a particular case. And it may even be that that statute yielded just results in the aggregate more often than not. But it did mean that the statute was imperfect. And you know what? That's going to happen in democracies and in society because there are no perfect laws and there are no perfect people. And life is messy. And we have technological change. We have cultural change. The only constant is change. And so there will always be some degree of disruption. And people just have to learn how to acclimate as civilly and peacefully as possible under rapidly evolving circumstances.
I think so too. I had a stepfather, his name was Thomas, and Thomas was a farmer. And he also worked for a number of years for a company in Chicago. So he moved back home, he and my mom get married. And I have to say, I loved him, respected him just as much as my dad. I mean, he was just an awesome, awesome stepfather. I didn't even think of him as being a stepfather, but now he was very, very, if he had his mindset about something, he was very headstrong about it. And one time he and I were having, we like to have these little chess games with each other. So he had mentioned something that I totally disagreed with. And for once, I was actually right in this situation. And so I thought, he's going to see it my way. But I had to use a gentle approach with him because he's from the old school. You know, and when somebody's from the old school, sometimes, I mean, they're not going to listen to reason. But he did. And as dog forced as he was about what he thought was happening, I kind of got him to see, I got him to see it my way without him thinking I was doing that. So I kind of had to, you know, do the Scarlett O'Hara ad with him. So anyway, if you know what I mean, the Scarlett O'Hara.
Yeah.
Go with the wind.
Yeah.
So anyway, as quick as he was dogmatic about his situation, he just stopped and said, "You're right." And I almost fell over. I mean, I was almost like, you know, but maybe it was my approach. Maybe I didn't come dogmatic into the situation with him. So maybe it was because I said, "I want you to think about this just for a few minutes." And that's how I started it. I want you to think about this.
Yeah.
And so that kind of took him out because he was expecting me to be dogmatic, you know, and I wasn't. And I said, "No, I respect your idea, but I want you to respect mine."
Yeah.
And so we did. And so, you know, I don't know. I think it may have been because I've been on the other side where I was dogmatic too. Well, nobody's going to listen to anybody. if you're acting that way. I think it's in the presentation.
I think that's right. Yeah, because you have your fundamentals, you have your foundations and your priorities and your beliefs, and you don't want to compromise on them just because somebody has come along and challenged them, but you do want to test your beliefs, subject them to scrutiny, and really make sure that you are correct, because we're all prone to error. And I think an awareness of our probable error, gives us the humility we need to form more coherent beliefs. And if you are always cocksure about everything, then you don't give your mind the flexibility it needs in order to accommodate new information and retain new facts. And so there's always sort of a balancing act that takes place as to holding firm to convictions and sincerely held beliefs, but also being open enough to welcome new data that is presented. And, you know, there always will be new data. I mean, the world is always changing, but there are always elements of the human experience that remain the same. So it's like the old pouring old wine into new wineskins. You know, we've always had wine, but sometimes the wineskins are a little different. You know, we've always had, the human condition has always suffered from the same sinful state and the same awesome characteristics as well, but their manifestations may change over time as we have new environments in which they present themselves.
And I also kind of like to do things. I think the best way to describe it is the Jesus way. So I used to have a business. And so right by my business in a mall setting was a guy who sold ice cream, and he was a Muslim. And so we gave each other respect, but I think the respect probably, and it was right after 9/11. Okay. So he was freaking, you know, like, you know, everybody's going to hate me because I'm a Muslim and all this. So we would have an area where there was an inventory for each business. It was all locked and, you know, secured and that kind of thing. Sometimes I would have to come out the back way of my business and pass through his. Well, we'd be praying to Allah. I will tell you this about Islams, is they end up more than we are in some cases. And so he had his particular time of the day, he would pray to Allah. And so I was respectful of that. So what I would do is I would barely, because my door squeaked and it would shut like fast and sound like an alarm going off. So anyway, I would hear him, and then I would go ahead and gently shut the door. But I think I led him by doing that. And some of my customers said, well, I'd be slamming doors and I'd be doing this and I'd be doing that. And I said, well, I wouldn't want him slamming doors to me. I mean, you know, not that way. So this is what happened to this guy. It was kind of it was an eye-opening experience for me, because even though he worshiped Allah on Christmas and on Easters, he would come to me and say, Merry Christmas to you. I mean, he would actually say that. And then he would walk up to me around Easter and say, Happy Easter to you. And I'd go, thank you. You know, because we had this relationship. And I always kind of thought, sometimes you want to lead people, but if you're all dogmatic about it, and if you're like, I'm right, you're wrong, if you reach that approach, I don't think you'd lead anybody to anything.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there are places for righteous anger. There are times when anger is the appropriate emotion in response to events. But most of the time, anger will not solve problems. Anger will only complicate things. And so it's not easy. It's not easy to suppress anger or to suppress passionate feelings and to assume the posture of a listener. But 9 times out of 10, that will yield more beneficial results, I think. I don't mean that in a utilitarian sense. I just mean that in a very human sense, in a relationship sense, that, you know, to preserve relationships, people need kindness, and they need to be able to communicate. I mean, that that's what happens with relationships that fall apart, is usually a failure of communication. Mm-hmm. And that's between married couples, but it's also between friends. If communication breaks down, a relationship can't be sustained. And so communication is very important. I think if you take that sort of notion and you extrapolate a bit and apply it to society, if people of differing political viewpoints can no longer communicate constructively, then society sort of starts to collapse a little bit, because mm-hmm. there's no way to form bonds. There's nothing to build on. Both sides are seeking to tear down, and there is no space to build.
I totally agree with you on that. You know, and I'll put it to you this way. I'm not a Democrat, but I'm going to tell you what, there are some Republicans I'd like to slap up against the wall.
Yeah, I know we talked before. I don't think we realized we were going to go this direction when we spoke. I know we thought we were going to talk about the Speaker of the House stuff. So maybe we will move in that direction. But it's this has been an interesting segue to the.
Well, it has. But your book is opening up doors, and I think people need to get it. Okay, I'm going to get it. Okay, I'm with the book. So whatever I need to do to get to order it from you. Oh, how can folks find it? And then I want to dig a little bit deeper into this book.
Well, you can put my name and the book title into Amazon.com and look for it that way. It will be available on my website. It's actually available there now. If you go to the books section, it's listed as one of the books, and you can click on it. It'll give you a link to Amazon. But in short, Amazon is the quickest way to find it. It's published by the University of West Alabama Press, which has an imprint called Livingston Press. And they publish literary works of creative fiction and nonfiction. And they very generously publish my novel. This is my first novel. So I'm trying my hand at a genre I haven't undertaken before.
Now, this is different, again, like you just said, from what you've done before. Let's talk about some of your other books.
Well, yeah, I think this is my eighth book, and then I have a ninth one coming out on ESG, which is just totally different. But my very first book I wrote as a graduate student at Auburn University, and I was kind of fed up by the Marxism in English departments. And I mean straight up Marxism. I don't mean that as just like a derogatory term or a pejorative. I mean, like, they're genuinely Marxist in English departments. And I was on the left as an undergraduate and moved to Japan and started reading economics, and then realized I was actually more conservative than I thought as I got older and I got into law school, and I realized, oh, I actually am conservative, but I had no notion of economics. So I just discovered economics during law school. That was new to me. And I started reading Mises and Hayek and some Austrian economists, and they changed the way I viewed economics. And I found their positions to be far more humane than Marxism, and far less lethal. I mean, Marxism and communism killed something like 100 million people in the 20th century, astounding figures. You know, the Holocaust killed six million, and everyone remembers that number, but people nevertheless won't say 100 million or hunt more than that, maybe even. Deaths caused by socialism and communism. And that's not just through direct killings or assassinations, but through, you know, starvations and other form of deprivation. And, you know, it wasn't all just killing fields, but there were killing fields. I mean, I've walked them in Cambodia. I've seen what Pol Pot's regime did. Stalin was horrible. Mao was horrible. And people don't like to say this because it's just unpopular, but Hitler was a national socialist, and you can chalk up his views in large part to socialist economics. So the history of the 20th century is really tragic, and I think economics can highlight some of the dangers of looking at centralized planning and collectivism and the desire to make society uniform or to standardize it. I mean, I find the terms equality and diversity to be completely incompatible. I don't know how someone on the left could advocate equality on the one hand and diversity on the other, because all human beings are radically diverse. We're all wonderfully and uniquely made, and we have different distinctive talents, backgrounds, and equality means that you're going to have to change people. You're going to have to level some people off and bring some people out. You're going to have to tinker with human beings, and it just inexorably leads to violence against people. So I actually agree with the value of diversity. And I think diversity ought to be judged on the basis of actions and results, and not on immutable characteristics like race that you can't choose. You're born into the world with a particular skin color, and you didn't earn anything by being born white, black, Asian, whatever it is. That's not something earned. But if you contribute to society, if you add value to society, if you solve problems, well, that's the type of thing that ought to be rewarded. And if you are uniquely talented to accomplish things that improve the human condition, well, you ought to be rewarded for that. You ought to have profits, or you ought to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. And that means that there will be an inequality. You may earn more than somebody else, but it's because other people have found what you've done to be more valuable to society. And so the results are earned. The fruits of the labor are earned. That's a hard-earned profit that is something to be proud of, not something to demean.
I think so too. You know something? We have to go into a commercial break. Can you believe half the show is already over?
I cannot believe half the show is over.
30 minutes. It happens every time you're on the show. So let's go ahead and do a commercial break. We'll be right back in just a minute. Everybody hang in there.
The Hatter Cafe and Country Inn is nestled in the northeast corner of Alabama the Beautiful in the delightful town of Mentone. We're located on top of scenic Lookout Mountain near Little River and DeSoto State Park, and located only 5 minutes from shopping and restaurants. There is also a nearby community walking path and golf course. We welcome everyone through the doors, and we are committed to outstanding service for all guests. At the Hatter Cafe and Country Inn, we invite people from all walks of life to come and get away from it all, enjoy the open spaces, treetop views, fresh, clean air, and experience Southern hospitality at its finest. We look forward to hosting you. To reserve a special event, or if you would love a special getaway at the Country Inn, you can call us at 256-634-2018. The only place I buy my beef is Lone Tree Ranch in Collinsville, Alabama. Their cattle is born and raised on their ranch, grass and grain fed, and you can feel confident when you serve your family and friends because their beef is all natural and no antibiotics or hormones are added. You can buy whole beef or perhaps go in with family or friends and buy half. Their customer service is number one, as they take care of the delivery to their local processor and can deliver to your home for a small added fee. They also offer herd replacement heifers. I always call Lone Tree Ranch in Collinsville, Alabama for my beef specialty recipes and cookouts, and you can too. Food shortages are increasing, so buy local by calling 256-523-6462. That's 256-523-6462.
My towels solved a problem that we've all had with towels. You go into the stores and they feel lotiony and soft, but then you get them home and they wind dry you. That's why I made my towels. They actually work, they're soft, and they absorb. And now I'm excited to announce two brand new lines of my towels. What makes them the best towels ever is they're now made with 100% long staple Shapir cotton. This is a combed ring spun cotton that makes my towels even softer and more absorbent than ever. And now you get a 6-piece set for an amazing introductory sale price as low as $29.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get my towels for only $29.98. Or you can get my designer premium line for just $20 more. Either way, you save 50% now on all my towels. They actually work. What a concept. This offer won't last long, so please order now.
MyPillow.com. Donna's Designs offers a line of handmade memorial, wedding, and keepsake jewelry that launched back in 1970. I'm a self-trained jewelry designer, and I will work closely with you to create unique designs you can love and treasure for years to come. Whether that be flowers that were used in a funeral arrangement or stones you found on the beach at a memorable trip, call me at 256-659-4319, and let's think of the possibilities.
Are you ready?
We all wonder what tomorrow will bring, but the future lays itself at the feet of the prepared and surrenders to the will of the persistent. It's not easy, but today shapes you so you can shape tomorrow. With Northeast Alabama Community College, when the future asks if you're ready, you can answer.
Yes.
Begin your future at Northeast Alabama Community College.
At Limon's Mexican Restaurant, located in Henniger, Alabama, and voted Best Mexican Restaurant of DeKalb County, Alabama 2020, we're here to serve you with authentic Mexican cuisine. Order easily online by going to limonsmex.com or call 256-657-3999 to place your order. We're open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Whether you're celebrating a cozy date night for two or a celebration for a crowd, at Limon's, you'll love our atmosphere and friendly servers. Thank you for dining with Limon's Mexican Restaurant.
Host of Donna's Edge on IEC Radio, your source for news and entertainment. You may also find us on television channel 182 on Communications, Abundance Television, on Roku, Apple TV, and Amazon Fire. Saying Apple TV makes me hungry. You know, we were talking just a few minutes with Alan Mendenhall, and Alan, I knew that'd get you stirred up. Yeah, food always does it. You know, something... food brings people together. And we've been talking about that. You know, you have just written a book. And so Phil and I had moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. He took a job promotion, took us there several years ago. We lived there for about 9 years and came back about 10 years ago. And so I didn't know any of the neighbors. We lived in a private cul-de-sac. And I was just, I wanted to know people, you know. So I thought, you know, it's right around Thanksgiving. I'm going to bake cakes and take them to all of our five neighbors. Do you know that opened the doors? Food did it. Okay.
Well, so, I can tell you, Donna, if I baked for my neighbors, the doors would be closed forever. Because I don't cook. But I might pick something up from the store, a nice gift basket, and bring it by. That might be a better option for me.
That would do it. You know, we love to talk about finances, you and I do. And there are some things the banks don't tell you about. You know, they don't want you to know this, but interest rates have went up. And so I kind of have a concern with young people who are getting married and they want to buy a house. Mm-hmm. And we're expecting the interest rates to go back up again in December. Is this something done on purpose? Is there some kind of a lying, something so that the young folks can't afford to buy houses? Do you see a trend with folks renting?
Well,
interest rates.
Well, I think the Federal Reserve and all central banks, frankly, have been elevating interest rates in an attempt to fight inflation. Well, guess what? They were also the root cause of that inflation. If we just look back during the pandemic era, interest rates were at near zero rates, which was an artificially low rate. And by the way, we really should let markets set these rates, these interest rates. We shouldn't let central bankers or central planners set these interest rates, because they're placed at artificial levels that don't match just the natural flow of commerce and supply and demand. And that's what the market is. There's sort of a state of equilibrium as the market sends signals to buyers, sellers, entrepreneurs, businesses, what people value and what they don't. But when the Federal Reserve set interest rates at artificially low, well, there was an expansion of credit. There was more money in circulation than there should have been. And that devalues the currency. That's what happens. It reduces the purchasing power of money. And then you have escalating prices, prices going to levels that they really should not be at. And that's what inflation is. I mean, that's where you get inflation from. And so in order to combat that, the Federal Reserve and other central banks and other countries will raise interest rates, but that causes a lot of other problems, and some that you've just mentioned. And it will really be very difficult for young people to buy homes. It's a very difficult time for millennials, Gen Z, and whatever the next, there's a term, I saw the term this week for like the new young adults. I don't even remember what it was, but it's like Gen P or something. I don't even know. But
I can't keep up with it.
some other kind of exponent. I don't even remember. But yeah, it's very difficult, especially in light of the astronomical cost of higher education. You know, college degrees are very expensive. And my parents and their generation, they could have gone to college. They could have afforded to work a side job and pay their tuition and still get through college. You could actually pay your way through college. That was actually a term, pay your way through college. That's not even possible to do anymore unless you just have tons and tons of scholarships. You cannot pay your way through college. I mean, my alma mater charges something like, like $59,000 a year in tuition. And if you add room and board and everything else, you're looking at 70 something thousand dollars for cost of living. And that is just unbelievable. That is, that's higher than what the median salary is here in Alabama. So I don't know, these young people, they get put in a hole. They take out a lot of student loans and they are stuck digging themselves out of that hole from the beginning. And the opportunities aren't there. Jobs aren't as readily available. Now, if they want to take jobs, there are plenty of jobs available in customer service and restaurants. Restaurants need jobs. Retail needs jobs. But you don't go and get a college degree and take out all these loans to take those jobs. And you've got a problem where I think we've overemphasized the alleged necessity of college, because there are a lot of jobs out there that frankly don't need college. You don't need a degree in English, which is what my degree is in, or philosophy, if you want to be a plumber. And you know what? If you want to be a plumber, you can make a really good living. And much, much better living.
Alan, they're the fastest growing millionaires in the United States right now.
Well, and that's the other thing that people don't realize. To become a millionaire, it doesn't require making millions. It requires saving and being safe with your money. I know so many people across our state in Alabama who are millionaires and live in very small houses with a lot of land. And they've found ways to make money in unusual ways. But most importantly, by living within their means and not spending more than they had. That's what happens to a lot of people. They make a good living. They make a good salary, and they invest terribly, or they spend their money on country club memberships. And that's, I'm guilty as charged. I play a lot of golf. I love golf. But, there are certain luxuries that I'm not willing to give up with. Would it be much smarter for me to not have a membership and maybe play just public courses, or, maybe not buy the $40 bottle of wine, but buy the $10 bottle of wine or whatever it is? Of course. And over time, these expenses add up, and it would be, sensible for everybody to live within their means and not try to be showy with your money, because what are you really trying to prove? You can't take the money. You're going to die one day anyway. You can't take the money with you. You may as well have the money in reserve and live a comfortable lifestyle and not have stress, and then also be able to give to those causes that you need to give to, or that you want to give to, and give to your church to tithe and to have a rainy day fund. If an emergency does come up, there could be a tornado hit your house. And I know there's insurance and stuff like that, but other unexpected things could happen. And you need that rainy day fund. Your car could break down. You need to buy a new car, whatever it is. it's better to have that cash on reserve. And I think young people have gotten used to a lifestyle where they just want to spend all they have, and they spend down and they have no savings. And that's problematic.
This is one thing, Alan.
Some of it isn't.
Well, say they say their parents are in these huge mega homes. I mean, you know, and sometimes parents are the fault of this.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes they want kids to move into that huge 5,000 square foot house now, and they've got to know each other just a little bit. I mean, they need to start out. And I'll give you an example. So Brad, my son, is going to college, paid his own way by the way. No, we helped him out some, but he, for the most part, he paid his own way. But this is how we did it. He bought a mobile home, and it's on the outside of the college, just outside of the college. And he rented out the bedrooms in it. There were three bedrooms. He slept on the couch and rented the bedrooms out to others.
Wow.
So he had the mobile home paid off in no time. And so we taught him, we said, son, you don't pay the house payment. You pay over the house payment. Because when you're paying over, you're going to save so much money in interest. And nobody tells the young folks that. No one does. Well, he had that paid off. So then he's engaged. My daughter-in-law, by the way, she's a daughter in love. She's the daughter I never had. So she's just an awesome girl. But she came from a pretty wealthy family. They were embarrassed that Brad and Larissa were living in a mobile home. And so, but what they wanted to do was stay in the mobile home. They moved the guys out. So they stayed in the mobile home. They saved their money and put this huge down payment. We're making double house payments. They had a goal to pay the house off in 10 years, a 30-year mortgage, by the way, which almost freaked me out when they did that. But anyway, he wound up making the right decision. They had the house paid off, his townhouse, paid off in less than 10 years, saved over $100,000 in interest, and they did it.
I mean, that's amazing. But
they set a goal, and they were, but now they both were in the same mind and the same accord. Okay. So they both had the same idea on getting this done. Now my son is considered the financial genius of the family because he did that. He has no house payment, no nothing like that.
I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, think about how much money that saves him over time, over the course of his lifetime. That's unbelievable. That's so smart. I wish I could trade places. You know, that would have been amazing. It's my friend's stepdad. He's my college roommate. He was the CFO of Wendy's, and we were, I don't know, shooting the breeze over dinner or something. And he was giving us advice, and he said, if you can, when you get older, negotiate a 20-year mortgage, which usually people are just 15 or 30. So I don't know how difficult it is because I didn't actually take this advice, but I think it's very sound advice. But his position was, if you can negotiate a 20-year mortgage and then pay just a little over each month toward that mortgage, you know, whether it's 500 or 100, but if you can just make a little bit of extra payment every month and pay it off early, you will save yourself so much money in the long run. And I think the same is said for investing. You know, if you just put away a little bit each month, in your savings or, you know, something like that, you really can earn a lot of money. And there's a lot to investing in capital markets that, you know, a lot of conventional wisdom is being challenged. And, you know, you want an actively managed fund with a mutual fund advisor. Well, maybe you shouldn't be paying those fees. Maybe you need a passive index fund, an exchange traded fund that just tracks the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. I think you'll do a lot better with that over 10 years. I know Warren Buffett made a bet with some other famous person and said, look, over the next 10 years, you play the market and you buy and sell stocks, and I'll just put it in a passive index fund and we'll see who does better over 10 years. And Warren Buffett did better over 10 years. And he said, you know, you just can't, there's not enough intelligence to know what to buy and sell. You've got to put it in something that diversifies your assets across fields and industries. So if you have a downturn in one, it's still held up by the other.
So why are these things not being taught in school? The things that are being taught are so disruptive. Like, I don't know if I'm a man or a woman. I don't know if I'm a boy. Why are those things being taught instead of good, sound advice like finances? What's wrong with this country?
Oh, goodness. You know, we've got a lot of we've got a lot of trouble. You know, you look at the chaos in Russia, Ukraine, and the chaos in the Middle East with Palestine and Israel, and you see people who are waking up every morning wondering if they're going to die today. And yet here in the United States of America, our most pressing concern is whether a man can wear a dress and walk into the women's bathroom. How much privilege do we have? We hear that term thrown around a lot, privilege, 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 in a negative way, but we should be ashamed of ourselves. We live in a country where we don't have to wake up every day worrying whether we're going to survive. We know that we're going to get our meals. We know that we have plumbing. Even poor people have iPhones and access to food in our country. And we take that all for granted and worry about things that are just luxury concerns. They're really just, it's almost decadence. We've become decadent as a society. And I think whenever a society becomes decadent and complacent, it enters into a period of decline. We've seen that with many ancient civilizations, most notably the Roman Empire. Yeah. And we have never even come close to achieving the degrees of prominence and power that the Roman Empire enjoyed. So we have, it's much easier for us to lose what we have gained than it was for the Roman Empire, which had centuries and centuries of building up that, you know, it took a lot more to undo what had been done than it will for us. We're a pretty young country. We haven't been around for very long. And so it can be lost much quicker, I think. And I'm afraid to say, I think we are at risk of losing it if we're not already in some form of rapid decline. And I know this decline narrative is something that every generation worries about. Every generation says we're worse off than the next, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I think the facts are starting to bear themselves out at this point. And we have governmental dysfunction. We have cultural dysfunction. And, we can see that rival countries are rising as we are falling. And I think it's pretty clear that that's the case. It does not mean that we live in the worst time in the world. No, we actually are very blessed to be living in our time and place, but we need to be careful about that. We need to be aware of that. And we need to protect what it is that we have before it does go away.
Well, I think we need to teach our children. And I want to give you an example. I know a young couple, they're getting married. They're trying to decide if they're going to rent a place. You know, we were raised, you buy your home, don't rent. So they're trying to make this decision. Are they going to live with the parents? Young married couple. Are they going to live with the parents or are they going to rent a place? Well, rent is just as high as a house payment. I mean,
higher in many cases. In Auburn, Alabama, where I live, you can pay rent for what my mortgage payment is.
Isn't that something? It blows my mind. So we have about 4 minutes left in this segment.
Okay.
Alan, is this all by design?
Well, I think that there are some people that are by, I mean, for example, we mentioned earlier the Federal Reserve and central bankers. I mean, their whole job is to plan and design, and that is very anti-Hayekian. You know, I'm a very Hayekian thinker in the sense that I want the economy to be decentralized, and I believe in the dispersal and diffusion of power rather than the centralization of power, because I don't think it's possible for one person or small group of people to possess the knowledge needed to make the right decisions for the innumerable acting agents all throughout society who are making their decisions based on their own local circumstances. I just don't think that even artificial intelligence has that capability. And so to a certain extent, there is a design at place. Now, is it always malicious? Is it only malicious? I don't know. I you know, there are people whose role it is to make those kinds of central decisions. And yes, I believe some people have nefarious motives and are bad actors, but I'm not sure everyone is. I think some people are caught up in a system unwittingly and without the intent to do wrong. I think some people are trying to do good, but don't understand that they are complicit in a bad system.
What are your thoughts that it all begins at home? We teach our kids.
I think that's
the foundations of finances.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think some people say, oh, the world's so big. There's so many big problems. There's no way I can tackle them all. I said, well, you know, if you want to do one thing, go read a book to your children at night. Read a book to your grandchildren at night. Go say a prayer with them before you put them to bed. It's a small thing, but it's something that is within your control, and it's something you can do, and it's something that could make immeasurable benefits down the road.
I think so too. Alan, before we go, you have written a book. Let's talk about this novel. Where can folks find it?
Well, this is what the cover is going to look like. It's a glooming piece this morning. And it is available anywhere books are sold, really, but Amazon.com is most likely your best stop for finding it. And you can buy it there along with any of my other books.
Absolutely. Alan, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you. I really appreciate the invitation and I always love coming on.
Thank you so much. And thank you for watching. We wouldn't have a show if you didn't watch. And also very special thanks to all of our sponsors. Thanks to the Gadsden Mall coming on board. We definitely appreciate that project. And Applebee's, thank you for coming back home to us. We appreciate that as well. And to all of our other awesome, awesome sponsors. Thank you so much. Hope you have a great one. Bye-bye.
At Liberty Bank, we're all about community, whether it's to help with a charity fundraiser or help families in need. Towards at Christmas or a local football team, we're here for you. You see, we realize the importance of family. Sometimes it's to build a new home or necessary home repairs. We're here for you. If you like the feel of a small town bank with all the conveniences of a big city bank, we're here to serve you. You will find us at any of our convenient locations in DeKalb, Marshall, Etowah, and Blount counties in North Alabama. You can call and speak with any of our friendly staff at 256-659-2175 or check us out on the web at libertybankal.com. And thank you for your support of our community. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Jeff McCurdy of the McCurdy Law Firm has been a public service of this area for over 10 years. McCurdy, a member of the Henniger City Council, serves as prosecutor for the town of Sylvania and was named public defender for the city of Rainesville. The McCurdy Law Firm is located at 17326 Alabama Highway 75 in Henniger to better represent his Jackson and DeKalb County clients. If you need to be represented by a true public servant with proven success, call Jeff at 256-996-8701 or send a private email to McCurdyLawFirm@gmail.com. No representation is made that the legal services performed is greater than the legal services performed by other lawyers.
Oh, it's so soft and smooth.
It's cool to the touch. How did you do that?
Well, we took MyPillow's patented fill and combined it with this new technology that we didn't have back then when I invented MyPillow to bring you the best pillow in history, MyPillow 2.0. Because of all of you, MyPillow 2.0 has been a huge success. And now we're bringing you our best-selling go-anywhere MyPillows with the same temperature-regulating technology. Made with my patented adjustable fill and brand-new cooling fabric, they're truly the next generation of MyPillow. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to save over 60% on our MyPillow 2.0 four-pack special. You'll get two MyPillows and two go-anywhere MyPillows. Regular $259.92, now only $99.98. King size, just $10 more. This is a limited time offer, so please order now.
The only place I buy my beef is Lone Tree Ranch in Collinsville, Alabama. Their cattle is born and raised on their ranch, grass and grain fed, and you can feel confident when you serve your family and friends because their beef is all natural and no antibiotics or hormones are added. You can buy whole beef or perhaps go in with family or friends and buy half. Their customer service is number one as they take care of the delivery to their local processor and can deliver to your home for a small added fee. They also offer herd replacement heifers. I always call Lone Tree Ranch in Collinsville, Alabama for my beef specialty recipes and cookouts, and you can too. Food shortages are increasing, so buy local by calling 256-523-6462. That's 256-523-6462.
At
at Le Mans Mexican Restaurant, located in Henniger, Alabama, and voted Best Mexican Restaurant of DeKalb County, Alabama 2020, we're here to serve you with authentic Mexican cuisine. Order easily online by going to lemonsmex.com or call 256-657-3999 to place your order. We're open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Whether you're celebrating a cozy date night for two or a celebration for a crowd, at Le Mans, you'll love our atmosphere and friendly servers. Thank you for dining with Le Mans Mexican Restaurant. The Hatter Cafe and Country Inn is nestled in the northeast corner of Alabama the Beautiful in the delightful town of Mentone. We're located on top of scenic Lookout Mountain near Little River and DeSoto State Park and located only 5 minutes from shopping and restaurants. There is also a nearby community walking path and golf course. We welcome everyone through the doors and we are committed to outstanding service for all guests. At the Hatter Cafe and Country Inn, we invite people from all walks of life to come and get away from it all, enjoy the open spaces, treetop views, fresh, clean air, and experience Southern hospitality at its finest. We look forward to hosting you. To reserve a special event, or if you would love a special getaway at the Country Inn, you can call us at 256-634-2018.
Are you ready?
We all wonder what tomorrow will bring, but the future lays itself at the feet of the prepared and surrenders to the will of the persistent. It's not easy, but today shapes you so you can shape tomorrow. With Northeast Alabama Community College, when the future asks if you're ready, you can answer.
Yes.
Begin your future at Northeast Alabama Community College.
Donna's Designs offers a line of handmade memorial, wedding, and keepsake jewelry that launched back in 1970. I'm a self-trained jewelry designer, and I will work closely with you to create unique designs you can love and treasure for years to come. Whether that be flowers that were used in a funeral arrangement or stones you found on the beach at a memorable trip, call me at 256-659-4319, and let's think of the possibilities.
My Towels solved a problem that we've all had with towels. You go into the stores and they feel lotiony and soft, but then you get them home and they wind dry you. That's why I made My Towels. They actually work, they're soft, and they absorb. And now I'm excited to announce two brand new lines of My Towels. What makes them the best towels ever is they're now made with 100% long staple Shapir cotton. This is a combed ring-spun cotton that makes My Towels even softer and more absorbent than ever. And now you get a six-piece set for an amazing introductory sale price as low as $29.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get My Towels for only $29.98. Or you can get my designer premium line for just $20 more. Either way, you save 50% now on all My Towels. They actually work. What a concept. This offer won't last long, so please order now.
MyPillow.com. At Liberty Bank, we're all about community, whether it's to help with a charity fundraiser or help families in need. Toys at Christmas or a local football team, we're here for you. You see, we realize the importance of family. Sometimes it's to build a new home or necessary home repairs. We're here for you. If you like the feel of a small town bank with all the conveniences of a big city bank, we're here to serve you. You will find us at any of our convenient locations in DeKalb, Marshall, Etowah, and Blount counties in North Alabama. You can call and speak with any of our friendly staff at 256-659-2175 or check us out on the web at libertybankal.com. And thank you for your support of our community. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.